Hey everybody, welcome back to the EV Cafe Takeaway. Yep, it's that podcast that is focused on a zero emission future. Well, this week I have the lovely Peter Heath, and I cannot say the lovely Peter Heath without saying he's got nice teeth. Because that's how we introduce him every time on the EV Cafe news. Peter, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
We've just had a lovely experience down at your premises down in Andover. And as today, I was joined by the wonderful John Curtis for that little venture. John, good to see you too.
Oh, it's lovely to be here because I was lucky enough to be the first one of us ever to meet Peter. And I instantly thought, this is a dude. I like him. And here we are all these years later. I was right. He is a dude.
Cheers, mate. Thank you. What can I say?
Well, it's been a lovely journey getting to know you, Peter, but also the wider business, PLP. You know, you're very passionate and focused MD, John. But we're here to talk about you today and a little bit about what PLP do. So why don't you just give us the lift speech about you, your background, a little bit about PLP and what you're doing today.
Yep. So, yeah, I joined PLP a couple of years ago. I actually was very fortuitous. I was moving with my wife to the area. So I'm from South London, as you probably can tell. I got this phone call from a friend of mine, Andy, and he used to work with me at BlackBerry. And he said, there's a job going at PLP. Are you interested? And obviously, I've known Andy for ages. And he said, it's a great company. And I jumped at the chance.
You mentioned BlackBerry, not the BlackBerry, like the mobile phone company.
Yeah, the BlackBerry. Yeah,
wow.
Absolutely. I was there for 10 years.
What happened, Peter? Why did it just disappear?
That's a very, very long story. That's probably
Peter left.
The best platform.
Ah, there we are.
If only it's just me. But I was there for 10 years. Fantastic company right at the cutting edge. You know, when we started, it was a GPRS network 2G. And look where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really do see the drive to net zero and what we're all doing as almost, you know, I still think we're at 2G, maybe a bit 3G, but there's a huge amount more to do to get it up to those equivalent super speeds of 5G and 6G. So it's a different industry, but it's not a different industry. It's still, I think, you know, just on that curve.
That J curve, I think they call it.
Does it speak to you as a person? Because there you are, you were at BlackBerry and off they went, and you could see that was coming. That was a really good vehicle for you and your career. And here we are working in an organization, PLP, which has, I mean, it's the biggest company you've never heard of, that provides essentially the national grids of the world with all of the hardware and infrastructure that they need to move energy around, as well as a shed load of other stuff, including EV charging and carports and all that stuff. Do you get in at the ground floor of something and say, I can see an opportunity for me and that business, I'm after it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a few things I consider. I mean, obviously, they've got to consider if I've got the right skills. So that's the first one. And will I fit in? But yes, I like the, obviously, the people there. It's a very flat management structure. They leave you to get on with stuff, think for yourself, take risks, but support you where you need it. There's not any egos there, which is what I really love. None of the politics you'd usually get in companies. It's just how can we work together to drive business? And we do it in a fun way as well. And I'm very interested in the whole drive to net zero. And this opportunity was something that I couldn't say no to. You know, it was just a fantastic opportunity. The whole ethics of the company, whether it's ISO 14001, the way they, you know, bring on, you know, students and educate them and give them a great skill set to, you know, move forward in this space. And it's just every day's different. As I said, we're kind of near at the beginning. So it was joining and then seeing, well, what can we do to, you know, drive initially for me, it's all the renewables. So it's the EV foundations and now the solar carports.
That's fantastic. And that commitment by PRP to bring people through from university and stuff like that. I think we met a graduate young man that
Hayden,
you know, spoke very well on and, you know, has been promoted through the business.
I talk to him every day. So he's the guy that, you know, designs the you know, all of the different EV foundations that we do. He's also responsible for all things environmental at the company as well. So he has got a very broad scope. And seeing he's only been with the company at just over 2 years, just amazing what he's achieved. And that's one of the good things about PLP. They really give you the responsibility and allow you to shine.
You mentioned the drive to net zero and that you were, drawn to PLP for that reason. What was it that got you interested into the zero emission sort of future that we all hope for as we have as our strapline?
So I've always been interested in the environment. I'm a member of the World Wildlife Fund. Love the countryside a bit like you do. I use the countryside and going for a walk to de-stress and taking my dog for a walk. I'm very passionate about it. I'm a member of the National Trust and all of those different organizations actually there at the weekend. And to me, there's nothing better than enjoying our countryside. But we've got a whole planet here as well to look after. And if we don't get carbon emissions down, then we're in big trouble. I remember, when I was 15, I did a circumnavigation of Iceland on my own, a bit of a strange one. But one of the key things was that, a lot of those pictures that I've got of me in front of glaciers and things have either, you know, disappeared completely or they've melted back a long way. And that's down to climate change. So, I mean, it's a irrefutable fact that carbon emissions drive global warming. So I want to do something, and I want to do something where I can say, you know, I'm helping the planet, so
contributing, you know, in the right way.
I've got some skill sets to use, and before joining PLP, I sold solar and solar panels, batteries, that kind of thing as well, because I do believe in it.
I'm fascinated though. Do me a favour, Peter. Can you explain what an EV foundation is? Because we're lucky enough to have seen one. What does it do? How does it work? What is it?
Yeah, I think we can get caught up in jargon in what we do. So, yes. So basically, and it's a strange one when you talk to people and say, "What do you do?" Usually they just glaze over. But I just say, "You do really want to know?" And I say, "Okay, no, I didn't." There they are. So an EV foundation. So basically you see all those chargers that you are seeing in car parks or in your house. So the EV foundation is what that charger sits on. It may be a pedestal. The chargers are connected to a pedestal that fits onto a foundation. Or it could be, it could be you see a big cabinet with smaller chargers, and again we do the foundations that they would sit on, or feeder pillars as well. So what we do is that we provide EV foundations that are made of recycled plastic. They're expandable, and we can actually configure them at our factory to any charger you want, and we can go from, you know, 300 by 300 millimeters to 3 meters by 3 meters. And the key thing as well, you don't need any concrete to put it in. So one of the key contributors of carbon is concrete. It's 7-8% of all carbon dioxide produced. And with our foundation, you can actually put that in the ground without any concrete. And you can also expand it. So what we're seeing now is the sort of movement from maybe smaller 7, 22 kilowatt, and then you want them to, you know, hundreds of kilowatts, you know, big DC chargers. And then Paul, you're big on the whole vans and the fleets. And so, yes, you want to be able to, you know, charge your vehicles quicker, and that requires bigger chargers. And so we provide bigger foundations to be able to do that. But what you need to do, you can just put spacers and change the plates. So what you're doing is you're not throwing stuff away. You see lots of concrete foundations where they have to, you know, drill them out, which takes days. And with ours, you can take it out, you can change it, make it bigger, put it back, and you're not wasting any materials.
Mm. And that's one of the key things for me, is that you're able to put the foundation in this big box, which is made of plastic, quickly. So with a concrete slab, essentially, you have to go to the site, dig it all out, put the foundations in, and then leave it to dry, which is all time. With the PLP product, you dig the hole, put the foundation in, backfill it, you're ready to go. And that can be in a matter of an hour or so, if you've got the right kit, rather than days waiting for the concrete to dry.
And I think another thing, obviously it doesn't need any heavy machinery, because, you know, it's tested, you know, up to 10,000 kilos. So we test it. You know, it's obviously very, very strong, but it's also very, very light. So, you know, you can have one person or two people putting it in. You don't need that heavy machinery, the carbon that produces, the transportation of the foundation, all of that obviously is less carbon. And again, if you want to change it, you can just add, you know, the plate, and also add the inserts, so you're fully utilizing that foundation and reducing your carbon footprint. And the other thing is, it's designed to last for up to 25 years, so it's not something you have for a few years and then you throw it away. It's designed to last, and you know, especially with Scope 3, you know, with all the UK new remits coming out and laws, then companies have to show that they are doing everything they can to reduce carbon with their suppliers.
Brilliant.
It's fantastic. It's such, I mean, for me,
I love it.
Yeah, well, it would be,
I generally
for
do.
Me, is taking the concrete out. And just for people, we will put a link to evplp.com in the blurb for the show, because the people can just go and click on it and see it, and you can see how simple it is. And I think sometimes we overcomplicate things. And the other thing that I know that you guys do is those carports. And I love the way that you anchor those as well. Again, that's without concrete, right? It's some sort of corkscrew. Is that right? Talk us through
that.
Yes,
it's called a helical screw. So in effect, yes, you're just screwing. You're screwing the foundation into the ground. Obviously, depending on what the type of ground is, it depends on you know, what types of screws and what sizes they are. But you can do that in a day. So, you know, you've seen the solar carport we have at our HQ in the UK in Andover, and that was done in a day. So, again, less concrete, you know, less cost, and also much better for the environment as well.
But the solar carports, you guys are linking those to chargers and batteries, just to kind of take pressure off the grid, and also potentially you know, reduce the overall cost and make the ROI a lot quicker in terms of, you know, driving down those costs, so therefore its value. Do you think this is going to be something that's going to make a real difference, and how do you see this moving out?
Yes. Yeah, so I heard on your report, earlier, that you know about putting solar in fields. Now, that's brilliant, and we actually, you know, in our company in Spain, in America, and soon to be in the UK, we'll do solar mountings for fields or even gardens. So that's something coming up. But also, you know, the key thing about you know, car parks are that they're a kind of a utility that's not being maximized. So if you have got all that concrete, why not put solar carports on top of it, generating electricity that can power cars or factories, or go back into the grid. And you know, the payback time, you know, I've sold solar before in the olden days, and the payback time could be 4 or 5 years, and that's the same for the solar carport. And yes, you can trickle charge the cars, And obviously, depending on how many EV chargers you've got, or how many solar panels. And one of the key things as well is that the solar panels are, you know, a bit like EV charging and battery technology. It's getting better and better and more efficient all the time. So you saw our ones were dual sided, but you know, I'm a bit of a technology freak, and you can see that, you know, the new solar panels that are coming along are going to become even more efficient. So it's even more of a, you know, an incentive to get that real estate generating money as soon as possible. And also it takes strain off the grid, because if you're thinking, you know, if you have a whole car park in the future and there's multiple EV chargers, and you can actually supply some of that electricity directly, then you're not trying to take that out of what is quite an antiquated grid, especially you know, on the sort of more local scale.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcar. Search Europcar Business.
You spoke, Peter, about your love of the outdoors and nature and the world that we live in. And I guess some of that suggests that you might be a dad and you might have a next generation that you care very much about. Tell us about your home life and what you get up to there.
Yeah, so yeah, I've got four children now. Not now, I've had them for quite a long time. Although, yeah, some have left and then some have come back and left and come back. It's all good. Yeah, I've got four children. And let's be honest, for me personally, my family is the absolute number one. It's why I get up and that's what has given me the greatest satisfaction in my life. And also, also include my husky dog in that as well. Very much so. But yes, so that's the most important thing. So, yep. Very, very important to me. I don't get to see everybody. Obviously, some have flown the nest, but it is very important. But we have got a quite close family. Yeah, my wife's Spanish, and so I get the dual culture as well. So, and that's been fantastic. So I've got the Spanish family as well as the English family.
Are you multilingual?
I can hablo un poco español. Sí.
Wow, that'll do.
Espero un poco mejor más en 2 años.
Well, there
yes,
you
a
go.
Little bit. I can understand.
Sounds like
more.
You've got a spaniel.
Ha ha. That was a husky. Listen,
Spanish with a South Spanish with a South London accent. Spaniel.
I try not to. Yeah, I think it's worse if I speak English to some people and they think I'm Australian. I think, which I've been to, and yeah, I won't name which countries, but so then I changed my voice to something a little bit more understandable for some people.
Have you always had that deep voice? I mean, is that because that is a very, very deep voice?
I think it's definitely accentuated by a cold. It's very Barry White today for people that know Barry White in the old days.
Well, you've always been my first, my last, and my everything, Peter.
Yes. Brilliant music. It's probably a bit deeper than usual, shall I say.
But so these children of yours, now I think we chatted a little bit early doors, and I think
they're small heaths, aren't they? Can I just say small heaths?
They're actually, they've got a double barreled name because it's to do with the Spanish tradition. You take the name of both, both parents. Yeah. And it's just nothing to do with being posh. Honestly, I'm not posh.
But so I believe one of your children, in fact, you got fed up with having sons, and so you decided to have a daughter, but you adopted, which I think is very, very laudable today's world.
I didn't buy her, dear me.
Thank goodness. That Next would be week. A whole different podcast. But so, Peter, would you say that is one of your more proud moments in your life to go out and kind of make a difference for somebody in that way?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I adopted, 16 years ago, it was probably a lot more difficult than it is now. And you had to go through, it probably took 2 to 3 years all in all. Lots of questions, lots of inspections, etc. So, Elsie came into our lives, and that's it. So it's been fantastic. So glad to have I think four's about right for me. So and a good addition to the family, and good that the boys have a girl rather than another boy. So it obviously she's got three big brothers that keep her in order.
Peter, what was your? I mean, I know this is a personal thing, so we'll edit this out if it's not something you want to talk about. But what was your motivation?
It's me and my wife's motivation. It's both of us. We just wanted to do. We you see people in children's homes or there's lots of people there that don't have maybe the advantages that I had. And we thought, why not do something good and change a life completely for forever? It was much tougher than we expected, but absolutely fantastic thing. And everybody should do it. And the great thing is that we adopted with other families, because you had initially you had these multiple families looking to adopt, and we've kept very close to those, and they've all gone on to adopt, and so there's quite a nice strong bond between the children, because they've got something something in common as well. So we meet up at least once a year.
That, Peter, is fantastic, because many people may or may not know, but I was adopted. I will say it didn't go particularly well, so I'm sort of glad of those extended questions. I ended up in a children's home, so I understand very much what... And I'd had a sort of okay-ish start till I was... Anyway, it's a long story. But in care, you realise how challenging life can be for people that have really had no parental input of any sort of solidity, like from a very early age. And it is catastrophic. The stats are terrifying. 80% of kids that are in care don't get more than two O-levels, I think, or O-levels. It was when I took them, but GCSEs now. So, yeah, and it's the stats exactly the other way around. And the stats around kids that have been involved in care that are in prison, it just that number is incredibly high as well. So I just want people really to understand the value of what you've done for people. It can't be underestimated, and it just shows something about your heart, which really warms me, because... I think one of the things that, getting a bit personal now, but one of the things that I've wished for in life was a real solid parental father figure. That's something that I've wished for. And as I look at you, I think if I was a 16-year-old boy with, just kind of a mix-up head, you are a really solid figure. And it would be... very encouraging for me as a human being to have somebody like you. Is that how it feels, or does it just, is it all crowded in? I don't know.
No, I mean, I wanted to do something good and to give someone the best life that I possibly could. Obviously sometimes it comes with some challenges and things like that, but it's been a fantastic experience. We're all very, very tight knit. It's been hard. The hardest bit was the initial bit of actually, adopting. So, that has got easier. Absolutely. I recommend other people, to go and do that. I think it's a better thing than just having another child.
Well done, mate.
Go out and
just
do something good.
Yeah, really fabulous.
You're providing a really strong role model, Peter. I wonder who was your biggest influence when you were younger. Did you have a solid and stable upbringing as a young person, or did you find that influence coming from somewhere outside of the family?
Oh, we're going deep now. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
My dad died when I was four. So he was older than my mum. So, he died of lung cancer. So that's put me off of smoking for life. My initials are, he was a policeman, and my initials are PC. So I wonder what that is. But my mum's probably, you know, was my sort of mum and dad. I mean, you know, to be honest, when I was in my early years, and I've had some, you know, I've had a stepfather as well for a while, no longer with us. But definitely my mum's probably my strongest influence. And also relatives, friends, you know, work colleagues, they all influence the way you are. And you know, the way you behave, especially as you get older, it kind of molds you into the person you are today. So there's probably a lot of people that have turned me into who I am today.
How would you characterize who you are today? If I was to ask you for a few words just about how you see you, what would you say?
Yeah, I mean, you always say, you know, the stereotype, oh, I wish I was the person that I am now when I was young. I probably adhere to that one. Life shapes you and the experiences. I don't get stressed stressed, because as life, you go through life. What was a number 10 on the amplifier? Spinal Tap fans, even, you know, 11. It's a one or two now. I mean, I don't really get stressed. As long as the family are all right and everyone's well, I've got food in my stomach and a roof over my head. To be honest, even if that was a tent, I'll be quite happy, really. I think material things are less important. You know, I do enjoy going for my walks. I do enjoy, you know, I like darts. I play darts. That's one of my passions. And I like weight training. And that keeps me calm. So I've always done that since I was quite small, like my granddad did. So I'm just grateful every day I wake up. Great, good start. You take it from there. Try to be happy, try not to be negative, even though as you get older you can get into the, you know, Victor Meldrew syndrome, and you know, I don't believe it and all that. It's all about just making the most of, you know, every day. I have had some friends that have died, you know, much earlier than they should have done. So you've got to really make the most of every day and try and add value to other people's lives as well. And also be a positive person. Yes, there's nothing worse than negative people. If obviously some people, their reasons, but if they're negative for reasons that I think are spurious, then yeah, they're not good people to be around.
You've shared a few things, and like this sort of startup nature of EVPLP, and you know, you're breaking new ground, and it does seem that something in you enjoys that environment. Now, we've talked again offline about a diagnosis of ADHD and how kind of an unstructured environment that can then bring structure as time goes by. But we know from, you know, both our, you know, individual businesses and the EV Cafe, sometimes you can't just work in normal straight lines. You need that ability to kind of move from one thing to another, let your brain run away with you a little bit. How did the diagnosis for ADHD help you understand yourself and also your work and environment?
Yeah, I mean, it came late to me. So, I mean, you know, when I was growing up, there's no such thing. My son had, we got him diagnosed, and they went through the questionnaire and I was going, yep, yep, yep. And I was more off the scale than he was. By quite a long way. It was all about, you know, that was like a revelation. And then things start making sense when you're younger and go, you know, that's the reason for that. You know, that's why I never did my homework and did it in the last moment and things like that. Leave things to the last moment. Revise for my GCSE overnight. You know, that kind of thing. Or O-level, sorry, not GCSE. Yeah, but once you realise that, it's actually quite a revelation. So, it's been something where, you know, you have to realise sometimes your limitations and what you're good at, and what maybe, you know, with this condition you're not so good at. And the good thing is that there are always people that are good at the stuff that you're not good at, and that goes for anything in a job. You rely on people that, you know, everybody has their place or are good at things that you're not. You can't be good at everything, and you need to admit that. And I'm very good at, you know, because of that, I can multitask. I can absorb quite a lot of information very, very quickly. I can make decisions quickly. I don't get tired. I can sort of, you know, when the brain's going, and I know probably John knows this, but, you know, it's and you can do that, for a long period of time. But there are other times when, the old brain isn't working. So sometimes I go in the office and say, I'm not feeling it today. And that's just, you just have to accept that. I do see it really as a superpower. You just need to know where that superpower is. And then utilize that. And I do quite like, you know, unstructured environments. I can kind of cope with all that quite easily.
Have you found, Peter, since your diagnosis, that having recognized that there is a neurodivergence there, that you are not neurotypical, that you become more neurodivergent? So I got an autism and ADHD diagnosis. And the more I embraced that and allowed myself to recognize that, the more it came out. And I am actually demonstrating much more the traits that I've hidden for so many years.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes you don't realize some of the traits that you have. I can talk a lot for quite a long time. So when we drive to Spain, that can be quite bad for the family. So they've all got their noise cancelling headphones on now, so I can be rambling away, but they're not listening. There's only a certain amount I can take. And my work colleagues will understand that one as well. I think they'd be starting to take them as well. So, yeah, there's things like that, and there's things that you recognise and go, hey, hang on a minute. So I would say that maybe it's not your embrace. Yeah, you've got parts of what you thought your personality are actually more attributed to, you know, the ADHD, but ADHD is part of my personality. That's who I am. I don't think it's held me back. I think it's enhanced me, but you have to realize that in certain things, you know, I'm not the greatest fan of doing expenses, as people will know, as spreadsheets, that doesn't excite me. But luckily with AI and things now and you know, with discipline, if you structure everything, things that you don't like, you can cope with. But yeah, they're definitely things. And that was the same with school. I found that really boring. So that's where I do feel at school, if you are neurodiverse or you're not tuned in a certain way to be that round peg in a round hole, we're missing out on a huge amount of people that are actually really intelligent, but they're just not being taught in the way that clicks with them. And, you know, and just going through academia, you know, I went to college after I went to school, a lot more practical, and did my BTEC in electrical and electronic engineering in Lewisham, and loved that. It was a lot more... I learn by doing. And, I think in school we should be doing GCSEs electrical stuff. I mean, you know, with the whole rollout and net zero, we're going to need loads of people to install those solar panels, those EV chargers, those builders, the solar carports. There's we haven't got enough people, so why are we not training them? And I think that's what some of the big, with AI coming along, those jobs are going to be there for forever. And, you know, people, I bet that, you know, if those people were taught, those kind of skills, they'd be doing much better than maybe, you know, they are now, because maybe the education system's let them down, or at least let them down initially.
You speak with a great deal of confidence, self-confidence, and it's, I get the sense that you embrace who you are. You're happy with who you are. Is there any limit to what you can achieve?
You sound like one of my car tapes that I play when my family are not listening to me. So I'm big into the old, you know, always learning. They get fed up with that. But yeah, so I think the key thing is that I think that there's multiple things. You've got to have the confidence to do things and don't be afraid to make mistakes. I think I heard a saying on one of my tapes that at the other side of fear is your destiny. And I do feel you need to go outside of your box and you know, what, it doesn't matter if you get it wrong or it mess up or, you know, you can do that throughout your life. And my path has changed multiple times, you know, and you just need the confidence to just say, all right, that didn't work. Good lesson learned. And, you know, and another thing that's a bit of a cliche, the more mistakes you do, the, you know, the better you get. Just don't be afraid to make mistakes and take risks. I do think that there's always a few opportunities that pop up in life that, you know, maybe some people say, oh, I wish I'd taken that opportunity or that. And maybe they didn't have the confidence to do that. Where, you know, I would say, just take a risk. What's the worst that could go wrong? It doesn't work out. You know, so take the risks. You know, obviously, as you get older and you have family, it's slightly, you've got slightly different responsibilities. But definitely when you're younger, but you know, as we get older as well, those responsibilities get less, and, you know, God willing, you're healthy and the brain's working, you know, and I think from you guys as well, you know, you've still got plenty of energy. You can still do so many fantastic things and, you know, go for it.
You don't know this, but you were part of my own coming to terms with who I am. When I first met you, you were standing alone at a stand which was next door to the UV Cafe Village. And the village wasn't particularly busy. It was late on.
I thought you were a cafe.
We are.
And I wondered,
find me,
no,
we'll
coffee.
Buy that EV cafe and we can get you a coffee. I remember that.
Paul will know this to be true. I don't easily speak to strangers, to people that I don't know. If I'm performing, if I'm on a stage, I can talk to a room of 600, 1,000, whatever it is, doesn't matter.
Oh, you're brilliant. I've seen you.
One-on-one, thank you. One-on-one, I really, really struggled. And part of my being brave and stepping outside of my box was to come and talk to you, because you were on your own and I was on my own. And my instinct was to walk away, avert eye contact, and go and hide. But I saw you and I thought, I'm going to go and talk to him. And I don't know why, can't say what drew me to you, but you were part of my improvement. You were my lesson for that day, and one that I carry with me every single day. And I now talk to people because I had that conversation, which was successful with you. And I just wanted to thank you because it made the world of difference.
Well, thank you. I had no idea. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think I'm easy to talk to. I'm not a, you know, I think hopefully I try and understand most people. I like most people. So, but I'm very, yeah, I'm quite touched. Thank you. Thank you for telling me, John.
Genuinely.
And whilst John may thank you, the people he now talks to, less so.
So true.
Anywho, but honestly, Peter, it's a joy talking to you, and I love how this rounded human being that has been on a real journey has done some really cool stuff, both in your family, but importantly for the future of net zero and zero emission. You are at the cutting edge of one aspect, and I think we must always remember that there is so much to this EV transition and this zero emission transition and decarbonisation. So it isn't all just about driving electric vehicles that don't have emissions at the tailpipe. It's also about all the infrastructure that surrounds it, you know, from solar panels to charge points to the bits underneath. Everything is important, and you are doing such a good job. And because you're doing such a good job, Peter, you're going to get a very, very special treat.
Ooh.
Only 156 other people have had this special treat.
I'm intrigued.
It is a treat. And it is to present you with the EV Cafe magic wand. Yes, you get a wish with the magic wand, Peter.
Oh, what's up?
This is all yours. So it's coming to you, sir, across the airwaves. There you go.
He hasn't done it.
Oh, no, he has. He has. He's there. He is. No, he's got it. He's got it. He's got it.
It's out of camera.
He took it off camera. So, Peter, you now have the power of the EV Cafe magic wand, and you may make a wish. Now, it could be anything. You can have world peace, although it has been done. You could have personal chef, but that has been done too. And you could have anything in between. What would your one wish be?
Well, as long as all the family and friends are all good and everything. I do hope that we sort out, all things, climate change and the environment, because we've only got one world, and I still feel in some areas people are very short-sighted and they're just thinking about tomorrow and not the longer term. And I think everything that you guys are doing and hopefully I'm contributing a bit to, and hopefully a lot more people in the future, is to realise that, climate change is there, but not just that, it's saving the environment and the countryside and the all the different whether it be rainforests or even in the UK, here in the UK we can't preach too much about chopping down trees because we haven't done a great job in terms of our wildlife and looking after it. So if I could have a wish, then it would be for people to just realize this. There is the technologies out there to make net zero achievable. It's there now and it will accelerate. It might be a little bit more expensive initially, but what's your definition of expense? It's just money, or is it the world we live in? And I think, if that's our legacy, it's to, try and leave the world in a better place than we came into it. And hopefully, imbue that onto our children and they go out there and hopefully do some of the same. And obviously to people we meet, but not doing it maybe in a preachy way, just more of a conversationist way. And I'm quite a logical person. I like Star Trek. And logically, from a purely logical point of view, it only makes sense, and so we should get on and do it.
I think we're all in.
I practiced for weeks before I can master that one. Oh, I can remember the pain. Anyway,
for those who are listening on the podcast
audio.
And not seeing it on the audio, we just did the Vulcan V's, splitting the fingers. We can all do it. So we're all part of the Trekkie clam.
Yeah, I could say to you guys and to, to the world, live long and prosper is a very appropriate saying. You just
universal.
Need to work on your...
Indeed.
Work on that.
Indeed. Well, Peter, you touched on something that I've just very recently experienced, the rainforest. And it honestly is such an amazing place, a place of life. And we are cutting it down to very detrimental effect across the world. So I think it is good to link this to things that we, many of us, not all of us, because not everybody has the upbringing or the opportunity to engage with, the wider world, the World Wildlife Fund, the National Trust, the woods and the forests around our countryside and, of course, around the world. But if we could just get everybody to see, because you said, to be able to see into the future, to have long sight, but in the way that you've given that opportunity to Elsie and other people, do that to give other kids the opportunity to see beyond their circumstances, because some can't, right? They just, their world is right there. But to lift out and give people vision, I think it's a fantastic thing. John, this has been fabulous and truly enjoyable and insightful as well.
Always knew it would be, and I've always had Peter down as a good egg. He's a solid good egg. But using the nature and natural comparator, he's not just a good egg, he's a great onion. And the more you peel back, the more you see, the more you like. And every single layer of Peter Heath is goodness. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's professional, whether it's personal. There's a genuineness and an authenticity about you, mate, that I said it earlier. I can't thank you enough for doing what you've done personally for me. And I know that you would do that for anybody. You are a genuinely brilliant human being.
Well, how can I answer that? I just appreciate it. thank you very, very much. And can I just say, meeting you guys as well has been, I mean, fantastic. I'm looking forward to my hugs at the commercial vehicle show.
Me too.
I'm a big huggy kind of guy, and and just watching you guys work, and you know, I'm learning as well, and still can learn from you guys.
Peter, you will be getting the biggest hug of your life from me. Just to say thank you.
Need it.
Genuinely, thank you for doing what you've done in your life for one individual. And the other three, quite honestly, because you're a fantastic role model, father, leader in our industry, because you're doing it the right way. And I so value that, and it matters. So thank you for being that example, and thank you for doing what you've done for Elsie. She probably thanks you every day, but in just being and living, and just by being there. I get it. She's a kid, teenager,
kids,
whatever. I know, they're all the same. They love you though. So, man, it's been a very special podcast, and I love the journey that we've been on with Peter. But the PLP proposition that he represents has that humanness at its core. We love meeting the rest of the team at PLP and the reasons that they are doing the things that they're doing. A really great bunch of people, and Peter leading or being involved in certainly the EV piece really gives me confidence that the future's in good hands. So if this podcast has been a blessing and encouraged you, then there's 150 something more to go listen to. Yeah, they're not all like Peter, but they're all special and unique. And we would love for you to go and be inspired with lots of the other ones as well. Follow our website and our socials, by all means, YouTube, LinkedIn, all of that good stuff. Until next time, have a great day, everybody, and reach out to Peter and connect with him. He's a good egg. Or a great onion.